Do you subscribe, Bill, to what so many people have said about the different species of aliens that have come down to this planet?
Okay, I've identified 11 separate species.
11?
11 separate species, subspecies, races, and castes. And the first and most obvious ones are the gray aliens. They are clearly a humanoid species 2 million years in advance, an ancient species. They're dying. And they reproduce through an advanced cloning process called replication. In order to replicate, you need raw materials, mm-hmm. because otherwise you make a Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox, and pretty soon you start to lose, you know, the information. You get dropout, and then you have a non-viable fetus.
Yes.
So they have to harvest from somewhere. And that first species are the classic grays, and that includes your tall ones and your short ones. The short ones seem to be a caste of, I don't like to use the word drones because that's really an incorrect word when you're talking about hive structure.
What about robots? It's the same thing?
No, they're not robots. Okay. What they are is a technician class. It's a hive society, the ultimate in hive society.
All right, like a drone bee.
It's the ultimate evolution of corporate mentality. But they're not like a drone bee. Drone bees exist only to breed with the female. They are nurtured and fed. They do utterly nothing until they mate with the queen, and then they're booted out into the cold where they die.
All right. What about the worker bee, then?
Yes, they are the worker bee.
All right.
Exactly.
Okay.
The tall ones are what we call the administrative class. And they are the ones that basically form the hierarchy or the chain of command. And remember, this hive structure is like the ultimate evolution of the corporate mentality. The ancient praying mantis types, I believe, are also originally from that same species.
That's the one we saw on Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Some people have suggested that. Yeah. Steven Spielberg got his alien versions from J. Allen Hynek,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and Dr. Jacques Vallée. And the praying mantis alien may in fact be what I call the ancient arbiters. They may be living computers. They may like the queen organism. Only remember, these things are pretty much sexless.
Right.
What they are is the arbiter or judges. If you can imagine the government of ancient Israel where it was ruled by judges instead of kings,
right.
That would be the analogy.
Okay.
And those praying mantis aliens fascinate, you know, the devil out of me and are a major subject of my artwork, obviously.
Yes.
The Roswell, or no, let's stay off of those for a minute. The next group is called the neonates. Now, what I think those are human fetuses that are taken alive from the belly of their mothers in the first trimester through advanced surgical techniques, and gestation is stopped, and they are artificially matured in an artificial womb habitat filled with, you know, different types of fluids.
Aboard the craft, you think?
Aboard the craft. And they then supplement the short technician class. They, along with the short grays, run around in various spaceships performing engineering and maintenance functions. Those are called the neonate aliens.
Neonates.
And they are human fetuses. They are not alien and they are not hybrid. They are human.
They look human.
They look like a fetus, an unborn fetus running around in a little costume.
Okay, so they stay that way.
Yes.
Okay.
But they're able to walk, and they're able to perform functions, and they're probably best in a low-gravity environment. The next group, and by the way, those neonates are very controversial, but I love them. The next group...
Well, why are they controversial?
Well, because, you know, you've heard of missing fetus syndrome.
Yes.
Okay. And I tend to, you know, run into problems with, you know, some of the religious folks about that.
I think you've done that already.
Yeah. So anyway, then the other thing is, the next group that, comes on the heels of all that are the reptilians. Now the reptilians, come in several categories. There seems to be large, very buff humanoid lizard beings that don't conform to either diapsid lizards, as we understand them on Earth, or dinosaurs, which are actually more avian in characteristics. They're almost as if lizards had been created with either in nature or artificially with some mammalian characteristics, including bipedalism. And they tend to wear heavy armor. And on rare occasions, they rape abductees, female abductees.
I've heard that.
I'll get to that in just a minute. Okay. I've got some information on that that'll blow your mind. The next ones are the more bird-like, but also clearly carnivorous-looking reptilians. And I believe that Dale Russell's theory about advanced troodontoid dromaeosaurid species that, you know, developed intelligence and possibly, you know, was taken from Earth or left Earth on their own before the Chicxulub meteor event finished off what natural deselection had already started.
65
million years ago. Correct. 63 million years ago, Earth was already recovering and there were some very lush forests. But these aliens, I think they're probably related to the troodonts, which were the most advanced in intelligence of the Velociraptor group of dinosaurs, which we call dromaeosaurs.
Some of these looked very Egyptian in statues, didn't they?
Well, now you, of course, have had guests that have talked about the reptilian beings that have been around since the dawn of man. Maybe they're still there. Maybe they are one of the multiple species factions in these underground bases. And maybe there are underground bases in the area of Mount Ararat and in the area of, you know, under the Sahara Desert, the shifting sands of the Sahara, and in the Himalayas. There's all kinds of possibilities. And I discount none of it. And these reptilians also rape women. Now, I used to think that these women were kind of full of it, especially the ones on the lecture circuit, until I started to get the same stories from rural women living in very remote parts of Mexico and Australia. And Australian women have no fear of lizards.
Who had no reason to make this up.
Exactly. No contact with the media or anything like that. No way they would have made it up. And no natural fear of lizards, because goanna lizards are a dietary staple for them. And yet they were all telling the same story as some of the ladies that we talked to in California, Alabama, and other places. I mean, one lady is really public. I can say her name, Leah Haley. I actually apologized to her because I've had eight other women come to me with the exact same story. And the other thing that fell into place is talk to owners of iguanas, especially when they reach sexual maturity about 4.5 feet. You know how you get those green water dragons and they grow up to be these great big 6-foot iguanas and they're really, they got sharp claws, but they're really loving and really gentle.
Well, I don't know. I've never owned an iguana.
Oh, they're cool. But listen, women and iguanas get along like you wouldn't believe. And women and male iguanas who've reached sexual maturity have a unique affinity for each other.
Yeah, but you know, that the same could be said about almost any kind of breed. I've heard, for example, that male dogs will be very affectionate, to a female, and not so, and vice versa. A female dog will be very affectionate to a male.
No, but you're missing my point.
What's your point?
Women go on their periods and they start to exude blood, and
we call it menstruation.
Yes. When they exude blood, blood has a scent, and male iguanas who have reached sexual maturity develop aggression and behavioral responses to the menses during that exact time of the menses. And then they go back to more subtle behaviors. And they do it every month. And so suddenly, the whole rape scenario of reptilians and women wasn't as off as I'd originally thought. So I did some drawings, which are available on our more restricted pages, but they are available. And
I hope they're restricted.
Oh, definitely. you know, because we don't want to offend, you know, parents, and we don't want to offend school teachers, and we don't want to offend the people that are, you know, bringing the next generation along. We are parents, and we're very parental-minded.
Are these reptilians warriors?
They could be warriors. They could be technicians. They could be opportunists, like pirates. I don't know. And neither do the witnesses. There's no way to say. The next group are the Roswell alien chimeras, or chimeras, depending on how you like to pronounce mm-hmm. that Greek word. These little beings look like little Asian children with eyes that are very similar to little Mongolian or Filipino children that are roughly around the age of the first grade. Bald, not totally hairless. They actually had a little bit of peach fuzz, and I got this from Leonard H. Stringfield during the last week of his life.
Right. Good researcher in his day.
Oh, he was the father of all of us. And I was the last person to ever work with him. And Len explained to me that their physiology and everything was very unique because their skin was like the tiny, tiny, tiny beaded scales that you see on the bodies of tiny albino baby Hawaiian geckos. And under the microscope, that skin was not the semi-permeable tissue that you and I have that allows us to swim in the ocean and perspire in this summer heat here in Arizona and still maintain, you know, our body's water and keep the natural bacteria species out that would start the process of decay before we died if we didn't have any skin. And their skin was, under the microscope, like screen mesh. In other words, fluids would leak out and bacteria would get in. So if they were going to do extravehicular activities in the Earth's atmosphere or in the Earth's oceans, they would have had to have been wrapped in some kind of an artificial cellophane-like skin, temporarily. They'd have to have some kind of alternative respiration, and they would have to get back to their ship fast. They were not designed to be outside their ship. The in-atmosphere ballast for the Roswell ship was this supercritical fluid, this amniotic broth that kept them alive.
And without that, because most of them were like knocked out of the ship, they were doomed.
They were quasi-amphibious and obviously artificially bred to live in a relationship with that spacecraft that they came in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this was the source of my original hypothesis regarding the interface between the flight crews and the spacecraft.
Right.
Now, the Roswell aliens exhibited artificial characteristics. They exhibited human children characteristics. They exhibited amphibious characteristics. They had to be immersed in fluid at all times, like certain species of African frogs that we keep in our fish tanks. That don't climb out and don't hop around the room. They stay in the water their entire lives, and they breathe through their skins,
mm-hmm.
and their lungs are vestigial and almost non-functional.
They literally dehydrate if they're not in there.
They'll dehydrate literally in minutes.